Yeah, I don't know who Kanye West is.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 168. I have got some video game news for you guys, as always. I sometimes feel like a news anchor bringing you the latest, the greatest.
It's actually good, because otherwise I'd probably stay completely in the dark.
Anything about video games. This one's kind of exciting. Sony has applied for a patent for a new console that would have total backwards compatibility.
Whoa.
Like, yeah, for all total of their stuff ever?
T-A-T-I-L. Total. On this device, you would be able to play games from the original PSX to all the way through to the PS5.
So why did they release a PS Classic?
Well, to jump on that classic stuff. I know, afterwards, you still cash in on the money. I mean,
do people want that?
Okay.
Yes.
So people that are Xbox people are going to say this has been done already, but I think for that it's like three consoles, Xbox, Xbox 360, and Xbox One,
and
right?
Even and then it's not complete library.
I don't think it's complete library, and even if it was, LOL compared to the library that is PlayStation,
right? It's been
from
around
PS1 through whatever, you know, through 5 or whatever. Yeah. This is a huge catalog of games.
It literally will increase the value of old physical copy PlayStation 1 and 2 games and such.
Well, maybe. There's not clarity there on if you'd actually be able to play physical discs. I hope to God, because I could totally see Sony wanting you to repurchase all the games, right? And just kind of emulate it.
Absolutely.
But no, don't do that. Let it be a physical thing. And anyways, number one, if it was a physical thing, like you could actually take your old discs and play it on that new console along with games all throughout, as well as purchase off of a digital library. Number one, would you be interested in purchasing a console like that, you personally? And then number two, let's say you did, what are some of the games that you'd want to cop or that you'd want to bring out of the closet or whatever to be able to play on this magical console?
And I'm not even a PlayStation boy, really, but that would be amazing just to be able to have a library or like play your library. But I don't think that it's going to be physical, because the disc is getting older and older the more time goes on.
It probably won't be.
Not only in gaming,
as I think about it.
Yeah, just in general. Like, we stream music, we download games. So
I don't know that they can call it backwards compatibility, though, when it's literally just like forward emulation and release it to you.
Well, it sounds nice. Even if you have that, that's pretty cool. Games I'd want, if it was going to be physical, I'd want like the original, not original, but all the Final Fantasies would be really sick to have on disc.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
And Crazy Taxi would be pretty sick.
Shut up, you don't get to say that. Crazy Taxi.
A lot of games, actually, but
Parappa the Rapper.
I mean, it got New Game Plus, but I don't think I'd need to own it.
I don't know. I'd get it, dude. That'd be
Guitar
fun.
Hero.
Kenny, would you be interested? What games?
I just told you all my games.
Monster Rancher and Guitar Hero?
Yeah. That's it.
And like Final Fantasy stuff. I would be interested, I think mostly for the novelty and just how like much that makes sense. I'm kind of with Nolan. Like, I wasn't a big PlayStation person, and definitely I think I would do it mostly for this show and then pick up some of those old PlayStation 1 and 2 games and like the idea of actually sitting down and playing on a console itself, which would be really cool.
I think just for as a retro gamer, it'd be a nice thing because instead Absolutely. Of having your PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, and you know all you of those trying to have the physical copies, you have your PlayStation and you're able to play That's all cool. the games on that station.
The hope is yeah, that sense. Catches on. Because if like all of the big players did that for their entire libraries, however Nintendo they did would it, never. Physical copies or you know even just purchase no. libraries.
Yeah. It'd be great. I doubt it will ever happen. I'd be curious to see if they ever would release something like that. Like in our retro game of the week, Wizards and Warriors.
Overview.
Wizards and Warriors is an NES title that came out in 1987. It is a platformer. It was developed by Rare. And
you know them.
Yes, that's the Rare you know and love.
GoldenEye, DKC. All, et cetera. Yep.
All of those. A lot of games, actually. I was curious to see where this fell within their catalog. I was curious to see where it fell, and I looked, and I found out that this was the second Rare game that they made. The first
the
one.
Ever.
Ever. So After, this was very
the
early
fact
Rare.
That a skiing simulator was their
gotta,
first game.
Listen, you got to start somewhere. We started with Earthworm Jim. They started with a skiing
Slalom.
Game.
That's the name of the game.
Slalom.
Say it again.
Shalom.
Slalom. It's a Jewish skiing game.
Yeah.
It's a
Jewish lunch meat.
Slalomy?
No. Yeah. Is that what he was going for?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's a stretch.
I actually caught that Kenny terrible joke. So, yeah, early Rare. And I'd argue, and we will, that this was before their stride and their prime, but this was like 1987, so before the 90s even. So this is an old game. It's even an old NES game, in my opinion. So this game, you play as Kuros, or
Curious,
however you want to pronounce it, the Knight Warrior of the Books of Excalibur, and... Well, there's plot. You're trying to save a princess, right, from this dark wizard. You're the warrior, I guess, out of wizards and warriors, and the bad guy would be the wizard. And yes, it does have very 80s style cover art, which is just some like painting
really
of
does.
Like muscular dude with a sword, yeah. orcs, and very D&D looking.
Well, you remember, take away a couple of the swords and stuff. You remember the like novels, not us, but probably our listeners. Your yes. mom was reading these books
no.
As you were growing up, and yeah. you saw like a shirtless Fabio on the front,
Long
hugging
hair,
closely,
yeah.
Like to a woman
a dame?
That just got out of a pool or something, a dame, a damsel.
Yeah.
Make the woman
exactly
really
this.
Ugly and put a sword in his hand, and that's this
an
cover.
Orc.
No!
Where she looks like an orc. Well, yeah, that's the styling here because, again, we're in the 80s. Acclaim published it, so you also know Acclaim. I'm not going to list out games they've published because they've published hundreds, if
I'll
not thousands.
I'll say two very important ones, Mortal Kombat series, right? And mm-hmm. then Mary-Kate and Ashley Magical Mystery.
Those are the two that you need to know of
Those
here.
Are the two games
the
from Acclaim.
Important.
But, yeah, this game is a platformer of a true to the genre, true to the name, you are platforming through forests, caverns, castles, and you're defeating fantasy characters. It's a very fantasy style game. You look like a knight in the character. You don't look like shirtless Fabio. And
oh yeah, yeah. That's nice.
I mean,
I didn't
if you
notice
if
that.
You took off his knight costume, that's exactly what he'd look like. I'm sure.
You're the worst person.
Man, at the end of each stage, you rescue a damsel in distress. And then at the very end, hopefully if you get there, you slay an evil wizard.
That's right. That's Wizards and Warriors in a nutshell, but I'm sure that we can break it down even more.
Let's break it down.
Gameplay.
So the structure of this game is, as Nolan just mentioned, very, very simplistic, very straightforward. You're beating each stage and rescuing the damsel, getting closer and closer to the castle that this wizard, or maybe it's even the wizard's castle, to finally save the damsel at the very end, to defeat the wizard. You've got bosses at the end of each stage. But within each stage, they're pretty even similar here, is that your main goal, I think, pretty much, is collecting enough diamonds to be able to exit the stage and beat the boss.
Interesting mechanic. I actually did not expect something like that. I thought it was going to be just a, like, go to the right kind of platformer.
Right. And it's not. Like, You can't go. You go to the right. You go to the left. Sure. In a tree on the first stage, up and down,
up and down. But so much.
You are.
Lots of that. Yeah.
You actually have to collect a certain amount of diamonds. On most stages, it's 100 to be able to get through one of the final doors to the boss. Or on one stage, at least, it's 50. A couple stages, I think it's only 50 that you have to collect. And some of them come from defeating enemies, but a lot of them are placed all throughout the stage. Some of them in treasure chests. Mm-hmm. All of that. That sounds pretty simple, but in order to do this, you need to search the stage to find keys and upgrades to your abilities and to your armor. And that's where I feel like this game has a little bit more depth than just a simple left to right platformer.
I agree for sure, because it felt very much like they wanted you. They designed the progression of the game around exploring the stages that they built, instead of, like, I can't even think of many games that have a high score threshold or something where that's how you move forward. And so I really did not expect something like that out of a very simplistic looking NES game.
Yeah, it definitely feels not like a standard platformer to me. It's undoubtedly a platformer. You are platforming, but it's very much an action adventure RPG almost. Like you're collecting items. You're not just, you know, jumping on enemies and running around, but getting upgrades to your stuff and looking for hidden rooms. And it adds enough complexity sort of within the typical fantasy tropes sort of, that it almost feels more like an RPG that just happens to be a platformer to me than anything else.
Yeah. You know what it feels like to me? It feels like an arcade game a little bit.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wanted to see if you guys thought so too. Cause like, yes, you can beat it in one setting. Actually, you have to, right? There's no save.
Right.
There's no save. Yeah.
But or password system. Unlimited continues, which
unlimited continues,
kind of
but
mirrors
so that's all
the
one
arcade
setting.
Vibe of, hey, just stick more quarters in.
Yes.
The kind of nonlinear layout even feels a little bit arcadey. The time, the collecting of things, the fact that it's
high
got
score.
High score as a pretty prominent goal, and a like scoreboard that it flashes at the beginning. Like the arcade scene of the 80s was definitely evident in this game and how it was made.
So let's talk about some of the upgrades, because again, that's a key feature in this video game. While you're collecting the different items, you are trying to upgrade your equipment, your armor, different things like that. And you don't need some of them. And then others you have to have to be able to beat certain stages, or at least it makes it so much easier.
So much easier. Yeah.
Yeah. The core items are pretty much required, I think.
Really?
I mean, I just mean like quality of life required.
Yeah,
I mean, all
sure.
the stuff that you're going to grab and that's not ever going to be replaced. Not like the special items, but kind of your progression stuff.
Right, right. So we won't go through all of them, but the first thing that I grabbed or that I found was the dagger of throwing, which was super nice.
It's all you use the rest of the time, basically.
Oh, yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like. Instead of just being able to swing your magic sword, you are able to throw it. And it's actually super nice. I was using it to fight a bat boss at one point, and I was able to figure out this kind of like jump around figure eight kind of mechanic with my character, so that my dagger was like trailing me at all times, like a boomerang trying to get back to me. But in the meantime, doing multiple hits on the boss. I don't know. It was super nice to be able to have a dagger of throwing, because it also gives you the flexibility mm-hmm. to do projectile type damage as well.
It really was great. And I hate to be that guy, except somebody has to. You don't throw your sword. You just throw this new dagger of throwing that you get. You still have your sword in your hand, which sounds like it doesn't matter, but actually kind of does, because of how the sword works and how holding it works and how it fights enemies. And it's kind of a strange mechanic.
Sure, okay, but I will say that you don't hate to be that guy.
Yeah, you actually relish
you kind of really like it, don't you?
It's sort of my role around here.
So you also later, a couple stages later, that gets upgraded to like an axe, which I guess is stronger, like does more damage.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell.
It hits for more damage, and okay. I don't know that I ever got it fully upgraded enough to see this, but my understanding is if you like then further upgrade the axe with like the little item upgrades, which I never had because I'm using continues all the time, and that piece at least gets reset, even if all your other items stay with you. But apparently you get to where you can throw like either them a lot more quickly or more than one at a time, which is big.
That's really strong.
Yeah, but like you could easily go through the game not having ever discovered that. Like the boots of Lava Walk. You might not find that on one of the stages, but it's going to make one of the next stages significantly more difficult because you're going to be taking damage from the lava floor that you're going to be walking across. So that's another one of the equipment items. Some of these items you just use, like the daggers that I talked about that Kenny made sure to let you know is not your sword.
It's not your sword. It's a dagger of throwing.
It automatically upgrades, but some of the items that you get, actually, you have to press a button to
use them, to activate them.
To activate. Yeah. So either holding up or pressing select.
Yeah, like the wand, I guess, would be an example of that.
Yeah, that's like another, is that another attacking mechanism? I think that's what it is. Another projectile.
Yeah, it's another projectile. Another one, like, I don't know if it's upgrading that same one or if it's a new one, but it does like a cone of like fireballs kind of. So you also have those projectiles. Like the game actually gives you quite a few like attacking methods, which was another unexpected treat that I enjoyed about the game. Yeah, instead of it just being like hack and slash, like most games at the time.
A few other items that were really unique. You get the levitation. Is it a potion? You get the potion of levitation.
Mm-hmm.
That helps you levitate, and you can hold the up button and it will actually like move your character up a little bit on the screen, like floating. And then you can jump from that location, which is
huge in a platforming game.
Massive in
especially a platforming game. That is so vertical.
Yeah. And like, for a game that's vertical, also getting that, that feather of falling or fall feather or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Feather of feather fall.
Yeah. It's something like that. Where as you're falling, you can hold up to like slow yourself down, so it's more a slow float, is super cool too in a game that works the way this one does.
One of my favorite, and then we don't have to talk about all of them, although we kind of did. One of my favorite items, but it's one of the reason why we're talking about all these items is because that's one of the unique things about this game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there are so many upgradable things. We've played so many platformer games as a part of this podcast, and I've said it time and time again, and I've forgotten exactly what I've said, but it's either something that your character has to change during these kinds of games for me, or like the stages and the what is required or expected of you has to change. The latter wasn't very much the highlight here. It's the former. Your character is drastically changing in this game because of all of these equipment and item upgrades. One of the things that I loved the most early on was the Boots of Force. You press select and after you have them, and it kicks open any treasure chest that you don't have a key to, which I think maybe that can just kind of lead us into the whole treasure chest mechanic, because we haven't even talked about the three different keys with the different colored chests.
Yeah, but you just did. There are different chests hidden, not even hidden. They're just like you come across them in all these stages, and the gym thing that Dustin mentioned where you have to have a certain amount is huge, obviously, and you want to find them. So you need to open these chests, but you have to have the right key in order to open them, which can be frustrating because these stages are actually pretty massive. Like
they're big, aren't they?
Yeah, and they get bigger and bigger. They do a pretty good job of hiding some of the stuff too.
Oh yeah, like even on the first stage, you've got three chests up at the toppest part of the trees,
the most
which
toppest.
Is not easy to get to. You either have to do like a boost damage from an enemy to get up there, or you have to wait around until an enemy just drops one of the like high jump potions.
Okay, yeah. Like they're just, I mean, they're all over, but you like you really want to open them. The way they designed them to look, like the look of them is really enticing, or at least for me it was. And so like they want you to find these keys and they want you to open the chest. So that's like a really big part. Like that's what I spent most of my time doing, is just looking for keys and those boots though.
Yeah, some of those chests are gems or like the diamonds. Some of them are, but some items. Of them are upgrades, like items, yeah, that we've been talking about.
One thing I for sure wanted us to talk about would be the controls and the way that you're moving your character around. So it may have been me just overthinking this because I really thought about it a lot and some guys in Discord confirmed it, but like there's input lag here, right? And quite a bit of it. or am I crazy?
Huh.
Like, you jump, and then there's a pause, and then he jumps, which comes with some of these older games, but I just felt it, like, more so in this game.
See, I never felt like it was lag, and it might have been, but I always felt like the controls, and I don't mean, like, the controls themselves, but just, like, the way your character moves and jumps and interacts is just all around awkward.
Yeah,
that's what I felt more. I didn't necessarily feel input lag, but it wasn't a tight expected Super Mario World.
Maybe that's what I'm getting at. Like, I didn't feel fully in control of my character. I felt like my inputs were slow, and then like he would do something, and be like, no, not that.
And then part of it is literally even just the mechanics of like how you're interacting with the world. Because to some degree, you can swing your sword. You can like lunge with your sword. You can also do these ranged attacks, but everything's just a little strange. The ranged attacks kind of boomerang back to you. Your sword, and I think even in certain cases, the way you land on enemies, but not like land fully on them, but just kind of with like your boots, like the front of your foot or something. I don't know. There's other ways to kill the enemies too. If they run into your sword at any point, even if you're just jumping with it and not swinging, it will kill them. If they run directly into it, it will kill them.
Yes. So a lot of wonky. Yeah. I definitely felt that. I attributed that some 1987 felt.
Sure. It's super early.
Even with the look of it, like it's primitive in a lot of regards. Mm-hmm. And like it's better than the handling you get with the character in Prince of Persia, but it's far less than what you get in like Super Mario World or some of the Mega Mans.
Mario's the master of like handling.
Oh, for sure.
And this is the opposite.
But one of the key things, and we kind of just threw it out a little bit earlier, but I think for me is kind of a major thing to talk about here in the gameplay section is that this game is a kind of difficult, a little bit difficult and long, lengthy, these stages and this game itself with the multiple stages that you have, but it is merciful at the same time in that you've got, I think, two or three lives to begin with. And once you die, you start again. So like you have
you start again from the beginning of the level that you're on,
but with the stuff, right, Kenny, or no?
Right, with all the like core items at least that you found.
Yeah,
you lose some of the incremental upgrades, but
if you still have a life to get when you lose a life, get to your next life, you pick up exactly where you left off on the stage,
and that helped me a lot because usually a game like this, like. I was getting, when I started the game, I was like, okay, I'm going to be mad this week because of how hard it would be. And it was hard at times, but the fact that there was no punishment for losing all your lives, I never once was like, man, you know, I just kept going.
This is like it's a really hard game to play. At least I thought the difficulty of the actual game was there, partly because of mechanics, partly because I'm bad, partly because it's so unique that like at least at first, I didn't know kind of how to even approach kind of hitting the enemies and what to do and what was safe and what wasn't. But it was like a really hard game to play, but a fairly easy game to beat if you were willing to put the time in.
I didn't beat it because of
the continues.
Did you put in the time? No, I guess not. But
I didn't fully beat it. No,
I didn't fully beat it. But I got to
the purple cave,
and I think I got a little bit past that.
It's the last cave.
Oh, you got to the last cave. Maybe
So like after that, you start ascending again. It's kind of cool. Like the overworld map. Oh, yeah. We didn't really talk about that.
Right. You see a brief world map in between stages, and it's kind of a nice little colored map so that you can see the different stages. I think you can even see, is it six kind of stages, but you descend from the tree area and you go in these multiple caves and then you ascend another area and then you climb the castle to be able to fight the enemy at the end.
You know, instead of just walking above ground to the castle.
Well, he's got to come in secretly, right?
Right. Well, it's a sealed castle wall. What you going to walk through?
Oh,
right.
See, they don't tell you any of that though.
You got to ninja your way in.
Sure. Sure. You have to knight warrior.
Ninja Gaiden.
In.
Oh.
Another thing we mentioned but didn't expand on is the bosses.
Yes.
At the end of each stage, there is, I think, a unique boss. In some of these earlier game platform games, they really kind of just rinse and repeat. They give you a different looking boss, but he kind of works the same way. And I think these are different enough. In the first one, you've got that skeleton-like skeleton head that's bouncing around, spitting something at you. In a second stage, or in another stage, you've got a spider. In another stage, you've got this huge bat creature.
And then the wizard to finish it off.
A little bit later on, there's the skeleton that starts tiny and then grows.
I didn't get there.
Did you guys not get there? That's when I saw, but didn't get to myself. So it's further into the game. But it's hilarious. Yeah. He starts off tiny, tiny. And then each time you kill him, he grows until he's like way bigger than you.
No, that's awesome. And I just think, I don't know, I thought the bosses were unique enough to be a challenge, but then pretty easy to figure out and exploit, which that's fine with me.
Well, just the fact that there were bosses at all is kind of interesting and goes along with what Kenny was saying about it not being like a traditional platformer, even though this was super early in video gaming. It felt like an RPG at times.
One last thing for me, I've mentioned it before in games like this. I don't love the enemy choices for the most part. It just annoys me when you just give animals as the enemies for your platform game because you're not creative enough to come up with your own thing.
What did and bats ever do to developers that they're like permanently the evil characters you have to kill?
Exactly. Good point. But also, like, there is a grandmaster wizard that's taking these women and keeping them. The wizard should be able to create enemies, and you do come across some other enemies, but you and maybe they're going with the whole, like, he's turned the animals against you, so I could even give it some here, but having to fight birds and bees and spiders just gets old to me, and I guess it's okay for an arcadey game, and it could make sense with this whole wizard warrior type trope we've got going on, but it's not my favorite.
Well, yeah, the cover's misleading. There's no orcs in this game, not really.
There's no giant cloud faces either.
I saw little trolls and different things. I don't know. It's just, it's a fantasy, dude.
It's an artistic representation.
Aged.
This game has amazing graphics for 1987 on the NES.
It does.
I agree.
You have colors, first of all, everywhere. Like, really good colors. Like, they're neon at times. They're very bright, like purple, but... Like your HUD, they kept the theme going with the font choice, even is what was noticeable to me, like where it says evil and life and score. Like, I don't know. Like,
this game icons were really clear what they were. Like, they just did a really nice job of making the visuals obvious. And it was pretty clear what did what. Like, when you saw a closed chest and then you saw keys and they opened, everything was pretty clear. It took a little bit of experimenting to figure out, like, which types of potions gave you which upgrades. But besides that, visually, what you were going to get was shown by the visuals. And so it not only was pretty, but it was like well thought out as well.
With that, I love some of the animations. The death animation, guys, please tell me you caught
leg.
It. But yes, the little dangling leg, dude.
Yeah,
so cute.
Great.
Dude, when your character dies, he falls down backwards on whatever platform you're on, and his leg dangles over the side of the platform that he's on.
Yes. I like you said, please tell me you guys saw that, as if we didn't die a whole bunch of times.
I know you died, but a lot of people are just going to mash the button.
No,
to come
I noticed
back,
that.
You know,
I was surprised
back.
That they went to that level of like animation on an NES game. Like, it, I don't know. It kind of felt ahead of its time.
And Kenny mentioned it, but with the different attacks like that you've got with your sword, even instead of just one like little slash, they give you a few different. Yeah, you can even kick. And maybe that was just when I had the boots, but you can kick. I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts here that
really
you wouldn't
is.
Expect from a platforming
and,
game at
and
this
time. And we didn't talk. It's more of a gameplay element than like a how did the game age sort of piece. But we didn't explicitly talk about it. Even the buttons themselves do kind of different things. You could do a press versus a long press. And get different, you know, amount of jump, different amount of throw out of your axe, different powers that you could use for your upgrades. And so, like, for as simple as the NES is as a package with buttons, the fact that they used the select button actively, what game does that?
Mega
and then
Man.
The fact that they gave you so many options in-game as well. Like, they packed in as much complexity as I think you almost can at all without totally being a different kind of game. And that's hard to do in 1987.
I would also say that the music is good. In fact, it's in between good and great, but I don't know, but it's so redundant, especially when you're on low health, which you will often goodness. Be.
Yeah, the low health warning is obnoxious. Most Here's games that have that, it's obnoxious.
And the invincible
though.
Thing.
The kind of well, but that's 15 seconds, and I don't know, it makes you feel invincible. Wait, even with the star and Mario, I don't know. The music, even when your health is low, I think is good, but it's so short and you're on low health for such a long period of time that no matter how good the track is, like it could be over and over, it could feel the love and it wouldn't be good enough because even though that Kanye track is good, I don't want to hear it repeating nonstop.
I love that example.
For 3 minutes.
I do.
Just that part.
Well, also
Kenny's like, what?
Kenny doesn't know.
I don't know who Kanye West is.
People really like this soundtrack, is what I'm saying. Apparently, online, a lot of people are saying that this is like one of the best NES soundtracks,
like
which
it.
Get out of my face, first of all, with that comment. But second of all, it was good. I'm exactly where you are, Dustin. It's not great. It's just pretty good. Like, it was on theme. I liked it at times. I really liked it. But yeah, there was something
it did
about
have
it that was just whatever.
Early NES kind of piercing 8-bit.
Which is like, fine. Yeah.
Piece to it. Oh, which is totally fine. And I even like that. That totally ramps nostalgia for me. But I did find I had to lower the volume. Like,
yeah.
If it was loud, it was kind of obnoxious to me. But if it was just sort of in the background, I totally dug it. And I felt like it fit the game really, really well.
I know not every game is going to hit it completely out of the park with I know they're not going to all be able to create this beautiful masterpiece of a soundtrack. And I don't want that because then it would like degrade all of the other. You want you want the standouts, right?
Right.
But this one, I think, did better than your average game of just like here's a little bit of music. It gave some very pretty, very unique, different tracks for different stages. And I don't know. I just thought it was well thought out, very on theme for the fantasy trope. I really enjoyed the music. I do agree. It's not like something I would just listen to the.
Sure.
I wouldn't listen to the OST for fun or just to enjoy. But while playing this game, I think it totally works.
It fits what the game is and when the game came out really well.
We talked about some of the mechanics of jumping and kind of character control. I think with that, one of the major things that frustrated me was hit detection. I just think it was wonky the most. And with so many enemies, another frustration, I guess, not just the enemy types, but that they are limitless spawning enemies.
Yeah, and it can be really frustrating.
So they just come nonstop, and it's sometimes hard to know if you're going to hit them or jump on them correctly. And yeah, it's some of those. That is, for me, the thing that's most felt with its age. Like, I guarantee you with the games that came after Wizards and Warriors in the same series fixed some of those things, but here in the first you feel that and it doesn't feel good.
We also we talked about how there's no save system and all that, and I was glad to have the like limitless continue thing because I do a podcast and I need to play the game. But from a challenge standpoint and from like a satisfaction from playing the game standpoint, I don't really like that. I wish there was either a save system that was not forgiving, where you had to get to a save point, or it was only after every stage or something.
See,
or
I would be okay. I would be okay with it if high scores persisted, even if you just gave that, because it's sort of arcadey in its feel. Like, cool, if you use a bunch of continues and your score gets wiped out, like you beat the game and get to experience it, but it, you know, isn't going to be a very high score, and at least it would give you that replayability. But since the high score thing, unless you turn around and immediately play again without like resetting your console, high scores don't persist. And so
yeah,
literally true. Like there's no reason.
But although there's a high score like tracker and stuff, I don't know if that wasn't the key thing for
me.
No, it wasn't. This is very much a story game. Like,
I honestly
it.
think that this is a perfect kind of game and perfect length game for not having a save. There's honestly very few NES titles that even had that save battery chip as a part of it, you know, right? Like you had the Dragon Warriors, some of the Final Fantasies, Legend of Zelda, but not a ton of them did. And I don't know, this is a long enough game to spend many days as a kid playing and trying to get further and further. But it's one that is totally beatable in one evening, one sitting, you know, after you know the game and have played it many times. And I think it would provide for a great challenge for anybody. But I'm just trying to think as a kid trying to play this game. I think it's the perfect length to not need or not require a save feature.
Yeah, I agree that they could get away with it. But Nolan's right to some degree. It's kind of, and again, I think because they don't reward that in any way.
Yeah, I like
there's
the
no punishment for just slugging your way through it. Like you could play it without a continue and get no more satisfaction out of it than beating it with like 42 continues. Even if they'd give you a different cutscene at the end or change the color of your armor if you beat it after using a certain number of continues,
or you can play shirtless.
Anything, yeah. I think it would have helped.
I think he agreed with you before even knowing what you said. Wizards and Warriors also spawned three sequels, so you can play it if you want to. Play them if you want to. Wizards and Warriors 2, Wizards and Warriors 3, and Wizards and Warriors X, because we don't know how to count.
Just jump ahead.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not our game receives our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down, requires two-thirds of the vote to swing one way or another. Kenneth, since you're the wizard of the family, how about you start us?
I'm super torn on this one. And
oh, great.
Let me tell you what, popcorn. I am, because...
sit back and relax.
If it didn't have all the continues, I probably for sure wouldn't have given to it, because I think partly just because I'm bad at it, but this game was tough for me. And you get better as you learn the mechanics, but then all the non-mechanical things are so good when you don't look at the weird way you hit things in the hitboxes. All the other gameplay elements are amazing. You get a map and you get unique places to go through and you have to explore and you get item upgrades and it's clear what you're supposed to do. And like that stuff is awesome and feels super rewarding. But there's moments that it's really frustrating to play. And so I'm torn. I'm going to say this one does get my vote for New Game Plus status for the quality of the game as it came out in 1987. I think it was an achievement and I think it's one that is worth people going back and taking a look at. You're going to be able to beat it if you put the time in, even if you have to just slug continue your way through it like I do. And so a somewhat hesitant thumbs up New Game Plus status for me.
I'll jump in. I really do like the design decisions they made this early on, just regardless of who made it. Like, this game's pretty impressive when you consider games at the time. So I, for that reason, would love to give it New Game Plus, but do I think people should play it? No, because it is pretty bad on the mechanics front, and that's super huge for me. And there's enough, like, vertical platforming that you have to do, like, a lot, actually, that... it's not mandatory, and it's weird for me to say because this is a Rare game, and it's, I don't know, it's cool to go back and see where they started, but this was well before they had the country team. This was like a different team, I'm sure. So I'm kind of looking at it as not even a Rare game and just the game, and I don't recommend it. No, I didn't think it was that fun. It's just kind of impressive at times.
We are where we often find ourselves, at the crossroads. We have one yes, one no. So allow me to break this tie and just say that I definitely give it my vote for New Game Plus status. This is a super impressive title for a 1987 platformer. Like, you can already see on their second release the budding talent that Rare has, or that they're accumulating. Yeah, it's sure, it's probably not the same team that they eventually develop things with, but there's something special here with this company you can already see. The graphics, the music, the uniqueness of gameplay mechanics with its upgrades and keys and diamonds and bosses and all of these things, I just think it works. Is it perfect? Far from it. But is it a quality 1987 NES platform title? Absolutely. I give it my thumbs up, meaning Wizards and Warriors is New Game Plus certified. Ace Matrix Zero, one of our friends on Discord, said, "This game was complete nostalgia for me. I remember playing this game for hours on end. That being said, I've come to realize my patience as an adult has become quite thin. The overly repetitive music killed it for me, especially once you drop below 3 health. And the frustrating jumps only add to the madness, along with the never-ending enemies. After playing for a while, I realized that even as a kid, I couldn't pass the third level, and as an adult, I couldn't get past the second. If you like a challenge and don't mind playing the game on mute, have at it. As for me, it doesn't get NGP status."
I don't think it was that bad. I mean, it's annoying at times, but I wouldn't mute it, you know?
I love this, someone going harder on it than you. You're like, no, dude, you're defending the game that you didn't get.
Well, I'm just kind of defending the music, because the music's not terrible, but it's also not groundbreaking. But yeah, it is a hard game.
Paul wrote in and said, "One of my all-time favorite NES games, and definitely near the very top if discounting Nintendo-made games. I played it so many times as a kid. The soundtrack is amazing, as well as the gameplay and graphics. A true classic, at least to me. Important question. If Ghosts and Goblins, Dungeons and Dragons, and Wizards and Warriors got into a fight, who would win?"
And Dungeons and Dragons was in there?
Well, yeah, they would win, right?
Yeah, of course.
Nat 20s all day.
Nat 20s. I don't know.
Wizards and Warriors just sounds pretty powerful, like as a trope.
A dungeon could wipe out all, like, dungeons not even a tangible thing. Thank you, Paul. And then Hookshot wrote in and said, "I was expecting the worst coming into this game, but I was super excited it was an NES game either way. I had heard of Wizards and Warriors as a kid, but never picked it up. It has a lot of issues, but I actually had fun playing it. Once you know Rare was the developer, you realize this was an early effort that shined in a few places, like the music and controls. Yes, the platforms are small and jumping slash landing can be frustrating, but I never felt like anything was overly cheap. The problem is collecting the items. When I arrived at stage 3, I couldn't figure out what to do. It was only after 30 minutes of exploring that I realized I must have missed something. In stage 2, I should have picked up the feather item to help me fall slowly. I read later that a blue potion would have also worked if I waited around killing the flames, but I didn't have the patience for it. That's poor level design in my eye. They could have placed the feather in a chest on this level and required you to find it before making the jump. That's exactly what Zelda and Metroid are known for doing. You see an area you can't access and search around for an item to help you, and you're able to find it. All in all, it's not a bad game, but Wizards and Warriors has some frustrating flaws that doesn't really deserve NGP status."
Hookshot. He knows what's up. But I do agree, like, you shouldn't hide something really important like that where it's in an other stage and you cannot get it. It's really important.
Or if things are mandatory or even virtually mandatory, you make them, like, you either hard make them mandatory where, you know, it's the you can't get past this without getting it in a place where it's not gone yet, or you make it so that you're going to get it no matter what. He's right. It's kind of that piece is kind of poor design.
Or just do what I do. Don't feel that pain and follow a guide, and then you'll never be left without an item you need.
Ooh, hiss.
Ooh, agreed.
Thank you for writing in. You can send in your commentary on the Retro Game of the Week each and every week to ngppodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to include your thoughts on a future episode. For now, we're going to put Wizards and Warriors to the side, happily with its New Game Plus certification, and we're going to randomly select the next title that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. We are going to be playing a 1996 title Sega Saturn.
I kind of like that.
How many Saturn games have we played? Two?
One? I don't know. I couldn't even name it.
It is a survival horror adventure game.
I'll take it. I love this.
Interesting.
Genre.
and it is called Enemy Zero.
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
No idea, but also I love survival horror games.
Do you?
Think they're fun.
Because I hate them.
Well, didn't a new Resident Evil just came out? I saw some people.
Yeah, baby, RE2 remake. It looks amazing.
No, thank you.
Well, we get to play our version of it with Enemy Zero this week. So play along with us. Get a copy of Enemy Zero. Get out your Sega Saturn. I know you got it there.
Dust off the disc.
Dust off the disc and play some Enemy Zero with us this week.
If you don't know what Discord is, well, I'm not going to tell you, but you can join our server. I'm just kidding. It's a chatting app, and you have it on your phone or your computer. Go to Twitter, look at our bio, and look at the link that says Discord for a free invite, and you can talk to us and all of our awesome listeners. Also, very exciting, still excited, even though it's been a couple months, we released New Game Plus t-shirts, and you should get
some sheet-terts.
We got.
I'm pretty sure I've got mine in the mail right now, and I haven't opened it yet. So I'm hyped. Well, I'm
you
do that right
opted
after we
for
quit recording.
The high quality shirt. So yeah, not all that. Of us can afford that, but we do have high quality fabrics available too.
I want to say a big thank you to our producer level supporters on Patreon, Zion, Bill, Dear Baby, and Alex. You guys are pretty wonderful. Also, big shout out to Kathy, who has just started supporting us on Patreon as well.
The Cathster?
Yeah.
Thank you, Cather. Catherine? Thank you. Kathy? thank you so much.
Guys. We so appreciate our patrons. Here's the deal. One of the things we have going on Patreon is setting up some goal.
Ooh.
Sort of. Tears.
What are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, I've got some tough news. We had been at one of those tiers, and this week fell behind a little bit of hitting that point. And so we are almost done completely recording a brand new mini series for you guys and are going to be ready to release it. But would love to have somebody step up and help us hit that goal tier again before we do. So if you've been thinking about supporting the show and haven't, or about possibly increasing your monthly pledge, now would be a really cool time to do that.
That bribery, though.
We are literally so close, and we are going to hold hostage this mini-series that we have put together. And guys, it's six episodes of about 35 to 40 minutes each. We have got endless content. Actually, it ends at whatever that six times 38. But it's a lot of fun. We've never gone this route or this direction with our episodes before. You definitely want it. We need your money.
Please, we're dying here. There is a blizzard t-shirts. Sweeping the nation.
I've been a negative 28 degree this past week, and I won't get out of it until you give us money.
Not even in
find
summer.
Find us on social media. In the meantime, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast. You can check out our YouTube videos on YouTube.
You can?
New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice, and make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. While you're at it, as always, leave a kind rating and review. That is so helpful to us and to get NGP visible to the masses. This episode was edited and produced by our friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Enemy Zero. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Kuros.
And this has been New Game Plus. And this has been New Game Plus.
You couldn't think of anything to say.
I was trying really hard.
That's so funny.